Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 464 with Casey Pike, who is a visualization supervisor over at Halon Entertainment. If you guys don't know who Halon is a fantastic company. They specialize in visualization. No, they are not an architectural visualization company. They are a visualization mostly known in the world. A lot of people know of it as Previz, but it covers a whole lot more than that. It is really the art of trying to figure out how to make a movie in many different ways. And so Casey helps us talk through all that process, including the idea of what is Previz and what is TechViz and what is PostViz. And really what it comes down to is someone like Casey really loves to try to figure out how things are going to get done. You know, he likes to figure out how things are going to get shot, how things are going to get edited, how things are going to be figured out in terms of the technology that needs to go behind it. In fact, if you're going to do a really complicated VFX shot, you need to figure out how to visualize that, and that gets assembled as well. So lots of things going on in visualization, and it's really cool to have Casey on describe all the things that they do at Halon and what he does more specifically and how he got there, which is also a really great story. We also talk a lot about virtual production and how virtual production fits into the visualization process, which is really cool, and talk about how AI tools may or may not change the way the process with which visualization is taking place in filmmaking. So really cool to have Casey on to describe all of those things. I do want to mention one thing about some of the things that are going on in the Innovation Lab. I have been working on a really huge project, which I can't necessarily talk about just yet, but I've been hinting at it here and there at different podcasts. And the reason I'm saying that is that, you know, it is occupying a huge amount of my time. And sometimes these podcast dates are slipping. I'm not doing them necessarily at the same time or even the same day. I'm releasing it a day late because I have been so overwhelmed with work. But I'm so excited about it. And I want you guys to pay attention because this is going to be happening more and more. And I'm going to give you guys more and more details as we go. And I'm sure by mid this year, you're going to hear a lot about all the cool things that we're doing in Innovation Lab. And I can't wait to let you guys know about that. And speaking of events, I'm going to tell you a bit about the events that are going on right now. Again, you can follow our events at chaos.com/events. We will be at NVIDIA GTC AI conference, which is happening in San Jose on March 17th and the 20th. Vlado will be there along with a lot of other Chaos people. And that will be a lot of fun. So if you guys are happening to be at GTC, we'd love to see you there. I also mentioned at the end of last year that Nikos is going to be doing a creative lighting workshops, and there are going to be more of those. And as promised, I will let you guys know about that. There'll be something in Berlin on March 20th, and also in Toronto, April 3rd. Again, if you want to know more about those, just go to chaos.com/events. I do have a couple of product announcements also. If you want to know more about our products, go to chaos.com. V-Ray 6 update 2 for Houdini and Maya is available. And one of the big updates for that one is actually Material X along with other updates. But the Material X one is kind of a big deal, something I think should really be some discussion about it. In fact, I'm planning a podcast with some of our product guys to talk about Material X and how that's going to impact workflow and what that means over at Chaos and how we interpret what Material X is and how it could be used. Love to hear what your thoughts are on Material X. So if you guys have more thoughts, let us know. Speaking of which, if you guys want to follow the podcast more closely, you just go to chaos.com/CG Garage. That's our website. We also have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast. Sorry, facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast. And of course, if you want to watch us on YouTube, all of our videos are posted there, including the podcast. It is youtube.com/chaosgroupTV. And again, any suggestions, including stuff like the Material X stuff, just email us, labs@chaos.com. All right, but for now, please enjoy episode number 464 with Casey Pike.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, You need to make sure everything has fun now.
Thank you, Casey. It's awesome to have you on. I'm very excited to talk about all the things that you're doing, hear about your past, hear a little bit about Halon, hear about your thoughts about where everything's going. And just get a feel for what's going on with you. But let's start with your background. Let's start with what got you into. I mean, have you always done previz? Has that been sort of where you sort of got into things?
Yeah.
What inspired that?
Thank you. Right. Well, thanks for having me on. So no, I haven't always been into previz. When I was young, I wanted to be a director and all this stuff, right? And like in high school. But then as like college, kind of thinking about like, where am I going to go as far as college goes and stuff, my passion at that time was very much in the like visual effects realm. And like the Lord of the Rings movies came out while I was in high school, and Gollum, you know, was like a huge kind of inspiration. And so I feel like when I entered college, I was like, I need to, you know, work on the next Gollum. And so I found a college that could let me do visual effects, like animation stuff and filmmaking, because the animation stuff just wasn't quite like it was too focused. You know, it was all about, you know, just the performance, but I was like, but I love making movies and all this stuff. And so I found a college up in Oregon that allowed me to kind of explore both. And there, you know, more so than animation, which is what I was like studying, I would, you know, make animated short films. And the reason why was not to show off the animation, but was to make the actual movies. And so in college, I got a visual effects gig. And that lasted for like 5 years, I think, at a company called Liquid Buddha Studios. It was very small.
Where was this?
Just worked on. This was in Ashland, Oregon. Okay. And it was this awesome experience, but it was working on small videos, you know, that would be posted online. But we also worked on a feature documentary that had like lots of visual effects of, you know, energy fields and UFOs and that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And then, but eventually, you know, there wasn't enough work up in Oregon. And so I started looking for VFX work down in LA. And that is really when previz actually started becoming kind of like an option, because I kind of thought of previz as like a lower quality visual effects back then. And, like, you know, you watch it and you're like, oh, anybody could do that because it just looks so, it doesn't look bad. It just, it's like, it's nowhere near, you know,
it's not the final
original
stuff.
Inspiration of, it's not Gollum, mm-hmm. you know? But I got a job at Halon, that was my second job.
So what year was that?
That was 2012.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And the first show I was on, I was like, this is incredible. This is movie making.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, it's using your visual effects skills, using your animation skills. But the thing that you're actually doing is you're trying to figure out how to tell the story that is in the script, or like if you do the storyboards or whatever. And once you put it together, you might realize that like certain things are missing and how to figure that stuff out. And in storyboards, the camera doesn't move, but in previz, it sure does. Mm-hmm. And in films, it sure does. And so it really wasn't until I actually like kind of got a previz job when I realized that this is like the closest, that a visual effects artist from that kind of background could get to making a movie without, you know, making the actual movie.
Sure.
So that kind of passion for filmmaking is able to come through when you're working with filmmakers doing
so. So that's fascinating. I think it's you got your second job as previz. What say is like, oh, I want to do previz. Like, what happened around that time that all of a sudden this became a thing that was a bigger deal, right?
Well, I think that I grew up in a small town in Oregon. Mm-hmm. and just loved movies, but had no connection to like the industry at all. And even in, you know, even in my visual effects job that I got, you know, back in those days, it was not making Hollywood blockbusters or anything, you know? And so, I think that Previz, like, I kind of knew it was around, but, you know, nobody from the Previz industry talked to my class or anything like that. You know, it was very much, like I learned what Previz was kind of on the job a little bit. But pretty quickly, you know, it's like, if you knew how to animate and you knew how to set up cameras and you knew how to, and you, you know, were a fan of movies and kind of noticed how things were cut and, you know, like the way that sound effects help and like all those kind of different things that make a movie, if you like kind of have a love for that and know how to animate, it's like Previz is such a, it's kind of like the perfect job for somebody who wants to be able to kind of flex those talents, you know.
What were the skill sets that you came in with when you were doing that in 2012?
Yeah. So I'm Maya.
Maya.
I had learned how to animate in Maya in school. I'd learned how to animate or do After Effects compositing in middle school and high school because my dad bought me a copy because I was making, you know, movies with my friends. And then let's see, I guess in my visual effects job, I learned camera tracking in Buju, which we don't use at Halon.
Right.
But, you know, camera tracking software is very similar from program to program. Let's see what, and then editing in Premiere. Yeah. I think that those were the main, oh, in Photoshop, I suppose. Yeah.
So you really kind of have to know a little bit of everything because you got to get it done, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something about Previz that, that it's, I feel like, I guess, on, the really successful Previz shows and teams that I've been on, really lean into the generalist attitude.
Right.
You know, the more generalists you have, the more you can assign somebody a shot and have them start from the beginning and end at the end, instead of like doing handoffs where certain things can go wrong or people talk and it's like, oh, well, that's not how I had it in my head and you composited it wrong, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, I do think that it helps being a generalist when it comes to Previz because you do need to like know how to like adjust some lighting to get the shot looking good and you know, all that stuff that you don't usually have to do when you're just learning animation.
Do you think that there's still sort of specialists inside of Previz where there's this person is good at this and this person's good at that?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that when we switched over to using when we adopted Unreal in our Previz workflow in like 2015 or 2016, back then it was like essential to have Unreal specialists, people from the game side who'd worked in Unreal a lot and stuff to help us build environments, help us with, you know, like how to set up levels and sequencers and that kind of stuff. But as time went on, those specialists kind of got like, I don't know, gobbled up by the Previz team and the Previz team kind of got gobbled up by the specialists until we were all kind of, there were very few people doing one task. It was more like, oh, if I can't figure it out, pass it off to the specialist. And with the specialist, if they can't quite figure out like how to get this camera move right, pass that off to the camera specialist. But the team makeup I feel like there are specialties, but then you've got this kind of umbrella of lesser and lesser skills that are make it easy for you to take a shot all the way through, but also, you know, beneficial to kind of like hand certain kinds of shots to people with certain kinds of strengths.
Yeah. I mean, obviously 2012, it's been 12 years, man, since that's like goes by. So how, obviously you mentioned the advent of real time, that's been very important to your, to Previz, which I can imagine, but it's still, even with real time, there's still a lot of, you don't just say, give me this and it gives you that, right?
Oh no. Yeah. No. I think that there's, yeah. So I think that like, you know, with it all kind of new buzzy technology, there's a lot of excitement about what it can do. And I think that there's definitely things that it helps make things faster or makes things better. But I think with the real-time technology, the first thing that it did was make it look prettier.
Okay.
You know, like I think that that you still, even today, most of our animation and shot kind of production work happens in Maya.
Sure.
And then we port that over to Unreal. And from there, like, we don't worry about like lighting or effects or anything in Maya.
So Maya, you're still doing, so you're mainly using Unreal for your rendering. Is that what's correct?
That's partially okay. True. That's how it started. Like back in 2015, 2016, it was 100%. It was a render.
Right.
But we would do our lighting and we would do effects work in there. And so instead of doing Maya particles and trying to
figure out
how to get them across, we just do them in Unreal.
Your camera work too? Where is your camera work being done?
Camera work back then was 100% Maya.
Interesting.
But these days, it's gotten a lot more like loosey-goosey.
Right.
So there are projects, you know, where we kind of like build out like a master scene and kind of figure like, oh yeah, this is mostly going to work.
It's the set. Like you imagine it as a set almost, right?
A set, but also with all the, you know, all the actors doing their thing. Yeah. And then you put that in Unreal. And then from there, you can either, like, if you think that there's a really complex camera move, you know, where the camera's attached to a helicopter and halfway through it's crash, you know, a guy jumps and it follows him through the air. Those kinds of things in Unreal aren't quite like, it doesn't have the speed yet to, like, all the tools and stuff. It's getting there. I feel like every release, you know, gets us closer and closer.
Sure.
But really complex moves like that we are often done in Maya. But just blocking out a scene, you know, just like simple tracks or even somewhat more complex shots. Like you can attach things in Unreal. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can generally set up a lot of stuff. And because Unreal renders so fast, because it's all real time, you know, you can set up like 15 cameras in a day, you know, just to get coverage, to play around, you know, and then you can just start kicking out renders really fast.
Right.
And that's renders with effects, with lighting, all this stuff where I remember, you know, being in Maya doing, I can't remember what it was on. It was on the Iron Man Hong Kong Disneyland ride. That's what
okay.
It was on. And we were, that was like maybe a year or something before we adopted Unreal. Mm. And I remember there was just some, you know, kind of, you know, a climactic thing where there were explosions going off like everywhere and like kind of surrounding the camera. And we had so many little like zoetropes playing in Maya, and it was so slow that that the renders, you know, would be like hit render and it would take 2 hours and hopefully it didn't crash.
Yeah.
But like in Unreal, you just hit render and it takes like 30 seconds.
Right.
Yeah, so Maya is still like kind of the workhorse.
Interesting.
But
is that mainly because of its animation abilities? And
it's the speed of animation. I mean, I guess there's just all sorts of stuff that it comes with.
Right.
But I think it's the speed at which you can animate. A big part of it too is that it's an industry standard that people learn, and so when new artists come in, that's what they know.
Yep.
And we teach people Unreal, you know, when they come
sure.
in, but also that, you know, we've done a lot of tests of animating straight in Unreal and there's a lot of stuff you can do. I mentioned cameras are a great, kind of way to start. And especially with, new releases in like the MetaHuman kind of technology, and being able to capture your face on an iPhone and put it right onto a MetaHuman.
Yep.
Those kinds of things, I think, are taking like little chunks away from what our Maya workload is.
Right.
But that that especially when you've got like your whole scene loaded up and you want to adjust people's, you know, arm animation and stuff, that the speed at which you can animate a character in Unreal is still, I think, a little slower than Maya.
Right.
And so, so especially in Previs where it's all fast, fast.
Well, I was going to say, like, something I've always admired about Previs people is that they're almost are like whatever it gets to get it done fast.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's, I think that that's true, that it's kind of like, because you have to hit, you know, a certain amount of shots a day to, you know, mm-hmm. to hit your mark. There's, you know, deadlines get pushed up and suddenly like you have, you know, 3 days to do a handful of shots and now you only have 2 days to mm-hmm. do a handful of shots and you still need to do it. And so it really is about, yeah, kind of that know-how to just like, be like, oh, well, this is going to take too long, so I'm going to do it a different way.
Right.
Or like, you know, the renderer is not working, so I'm going to switch over to After Effects to put, you know, our slates and HUDs and effects on it, you know, that kind of sure. stuff, which we do less and less because back in the old days, it, you know, things weren't as stable. But these days, I feel like, you know, Unreal specifically is like, we can do, I mean, we keep pushing the quality and stuff. So we get crashes when we add too many effects and sure. all that stuff. Still, but it's just so much more dependable than it was back in the War for the Planet of the Apes
right.
days.
Okay. We'll get to some of your projects in a bit, but yeah. What about, like, obviously, you know, when you sort of entered in 2012 and you were looking at, you know, getting previs, there's a whole new set of skills that you probably have to learn in terms of cinematography, cameras, all that, and just the language of what it's like to set up a shot. Like what was that like?
Yeah. Well, I think that for me, so I feel like I kind of like throughout my whole, like in middle school and high school, you know, I was just making movies with my friends
okay.
and, you know, entering film festivals and stuff.
Cool.
And so like a lot of that stuff from kind of like an amateur perspective, I knew what, you know, a push in meant.
Sure.
You know,
okay.
From back then. Right. But there are times when, you know, especially when we hire people who are, you know, out of animation school or something mm-hmm. that have never animated a camera in their life. It's all lock-offs.
Right.
Right? And so, so I do think, yeah, so the film lingo, you know, push in, pull out, boom up, boom down, mm-hmm. like trucks left, truck right, like all that stuff was stuff that you pick up pretty quickly. But I had kind of the benefit of having kind of chosen to have half of my education in school be in film instead of just in visual effects or animation. But it's all about, like, I mean, previs is very much about, is very much about the storytelling.
Sure.
But the camera specifically is the camera and how to communicate action from one shot to another are things that I think are different in previs than in other kinds of effects work, because you're trying to tell your story, and is that story going to be told better if you put it on like a longer lens or a wider lens? Is it, you know, I think that there's aspects of filmmaking that, that, you know, like old, not even old, but like Steven Spielberg movies or like John Ford movies where there's long scenes that aren't thought of as like oneers,
yep.
but they are oneers
yep.
because they like shift backward and you've got one composition and the character walks and it like rotates 90 degrees.
Yeah.
And then you've got another shot, and like you can build out scenes like that. But most of the time, what we previs is like action scenes and stuff.
Sure.
Where it gets a little bit more cutty, but you still get presented with those kinds of challenges. So yeah, knowing real world filming lingo, and but also real world limitations is important, especially when it comes to previs. Because we work mainly on like, you know, big action set pieces. And so you need to know if the shot that you're doing is going to be like an all CG camera where like anything's possible, and or if it's going to be on a Russian arm and it's like, well, how fast is this camera moving? And you're like, it's moving at 150 miles an
hour. That's not going to work.
Okay, yeah, that's not going to work. So then you have to like adjust your shots to make sure that that you can get something that when you hand that off to the production and they look at it, they say, oh yeah, we can film this. The question is just like how?
Right.
And that's where like tech viz kind of comes mm-hmm. in. But also, even without a tech viz pass, because previs has, you know, many different uses. But even just artistically, being able to see what the director kind of has in their mind in previs form and being able to hand that out to the team to say, like, this is what we want the shot to be. So that's going to require a crane that can reach this height.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this many extras or where the blue screen's going to be or whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of awesome to be able to like do that because you're really helping, architect an entire production in some ways, right?
Yeah. It's like, I definitely view it as like there's the artistic side where the director's like, this is my vision. These are what my shots are going to be, or brings like storyboards to the table. And we kind of start from those, copy those, but then start adding the motion and all that stuff. And things start changing from there. So there's the artistic exercise. And then there's the tech viz exercise, which is what we just kind of talked about, which is kind of giving the other parts of the production a kind of a blueprint for how to achieve the shots that the director wants.
Sure.
And then there's the budgetary side, which is, this is what it is. Can we even afford this?
Right.
And if we can't, how do we change the previs to make it something that we're happy with, but we, you know, but they can also afford. So like ultimately it does have a lot of uses, from realizing your artistic vision to, planning and bidding out, your production.
Right. Yeah. I always thought, it's, people think that what, just like you in a lot of ways, assuming it's like, oh, I'm going to work on Gollum because I want to work on movies. Previs is actually the way closer to actually working on movies.
Yeah.
And it's than the actual final frame, right?
Yeah. It's a different experience for sure. Because I feel like when you work, I started, for 5 years in visual effects, and it was like really rewarding to see the movie in the theater.
Oh, I know. I made that pixel. Yeah, I made that.
Yeah, exactly. So that's like one kind of like pride.
Sure.
When you see your own work. But with previs, you never see your own work on the screen. Right. But you watch five or six shots in a row and you're like, oh, those all look exactly like what I did. Mm-hmm. But instead of like a video game character running around, it's like a famous actor. Mm-hmm. And there's like some amazing creature made by a visual
about $3 million worth of pixels here.
Yeah. So it's a completely different kind of experience, but it's so similar because you're just like, you're seeing your own work portrayed on the screen, which is always fun. And that you get to work with, that you get to work with the directors and that kind of core creative team so often is also really that's where like kind of the fuel comes in, and you kind of churn it and show them shots and then they give you notes or they jump in and VCam some shots. It's like an iterative process. It's a collaborative process. And it really does feel like you're helping the filmmakers make their film.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a kind of a really clever way to do things. The only issue I have with previs is sometimes, especially when you're on the other side of things, when you're actually at the end and you're doing the final animation, they get married to the previs animation. And sometimes the previs animation is not quite refined, which is totally a normal.
Which is, kind of the purpose.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're like, no, I want it to look, and it's like, but it doesn't look natural. But they've seen it so many times that they can't unsee something. That's always been my issue. Like I did an opening sequence. I was a supervisor on an opening sequence to a movie called 21. And it's supposed to have these cards coming down for, blackjack table. These cards coming down. And the cards had to, in the previs, had these very shup-bunk animation. I was like, well, normally they would kind of have a little float or a little boomf air. And so we added all these physical things. Like, no, it has to be like the previs. It's gush-dunk. Like, well, that doesn't look very natural. And so suddenly, like, we were fighting this previs that we realized we didn't have any control over. So it was kind of an interesting thing. But I at the same time, that's not the previs' fault. That's the director or the editor who's seen it too many times.
And that's another thing with when you're seeing your previs work on film.
Mm-hmm.
There are kind of a couple different things that can happen. One is that your scene gets cut or something, and you're like, I worked on this thing and I didn't see it. But then there's a couple
of, and it's very likely, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that you guys work on that probably just get thrown away.
I mean, that's actually
that's why you do them.
yeah, exactly. That is actually one of the skills that I think people people who are listening in who might be interested in previs, mm-hmm. one of the things that you do have to do with when you work on previs is basically be fine with your work getting thrown away. Like the whole point mm-hmm. is
nothing's precious, right?
Yeah, nothing's precious. And I think that as you get into working on it, you know, like you get used to having a great idea and you show it and you're like, oh, this is awesome. And people might even like it. And then like the next day they're like, new idea, scrap all that. We're doing this new thing, you know? And, mm-hmm. And so, yeah. So being able to kind of roll with the punches is definitely a skill, but there's a couple other experiences that are interesting when you're watching a movie that you've either done previs or post-vis on, is that you watch a shot that's like definitely your shot, but it's like better, you know? It's like, you right. know, suddenly it's like, oh, they made these, like this performance is cool. Like they changed how I, you know, how this ship crashed, and it's way better than it was when I did it. You know, so there's like this kind of pride that you like, you know, made something that somebody else took and plussed and made better. And then right. there's the other side where you watch something and you're like, oh, I kind of wish they did more with that shot, because I only had like a half a day to do that thing and I just threw something together.
And like, I guess I just took it as is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure that's like, that's probably, yeah, like you were saying, like the director or the editor or whatever, but it could also just be, you know, the time, you know, it's like yeah. we focused on all these shots to make them look great. And this one shot, it works. So we're going to keep it as is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So Jess, since you were talking about people learning about this, give people a quick understanding. I was like, we know previs. We've heard of the term previs.
Yeah.
But help define maybe, we mentioned previs, we mentioned tech viz, we mentioned yeah. post viz. Yes. Tell people what those different roles are and why they're called what they are.
All right, cool. All right. So I'm going to start with pitch viz, which is previs.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. Pitch viz. Yeah.
Pitch viz, which is
previs. How you get your movies, Dave.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just previs, but it's previs to get a movie funded or greenlit or whatnot. Like,
and it's usually done at a higher quality because it's got to look good, right?
Exactly. You have to impress people with it. And so whereas with previs, there's a lot of like, you know, a shot of somebody like this and they just don't move. And it's like all you needed is that close up. But for pitch viz, you'd want to put yeah. in like them looking around or whatever.
Right.
So yeah.
Right.
So pitch viz is previs, but like, you know, more expensive. And, right. but it's also short, and like you might work on a pitch viz and it's just so good and the movie doesn't get greenlit and yep, you're never going to see your stuff. So there's previs or pitch viz. Previs. All right, I'll list them off first. So we got pitch viz, previs, tech viz, post viz. And then right. even though it's not, it doesn't have viz in its title, there's virtual production and there's a couple different.
We'll get to that later. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So, okay, cool. So pitch viz, expensive previs that looks a lot better, that you spend right. more time on. yep. And then you got previs, which is animating on, you know, in a 3D environment like in Maya and mm-hmm. in Unreal, putting together a scene and shooting it like you would a movie. And you get direction from the director, the producers, the visual effects producer and supervisor. You know, those are the people that you get all this like kind of content from. And then you have to basically like match their vision and then show it to them. And then they start giving notes on, you know, how they want it to change, things you got right, things you got wrong, ideas that it's like they might see it and they might be like, oh, that's a cool idea. How about we go in this direction? You do a little bit of exploring. And all of that is through animating characters and props, you know, mm-hmm. in like Maya, and animating your camera to shoot it the way that you and the director, or that the director wants, that you're mm-hmm. facilitating. And it is a collaborative process. So you can throw out ideas. Some of them stick, some of them don't. But really what you're doing is you're trying to get like the director's vision that's in their brain onto a screen in an animated form that they can take to then go plan and shoot their movie for real.
Right. So this goes into an edit. So then, and then yeah, also, right. and then once the director says, yeah, that's the way I want it to look, they can take that to the DP and say, shoot it like this.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And like the DP, sometimes it's not like super common, but yeah, the DPs are sometimes involved early on. And so the last movie I worked on, The DP was part of the previs process. He was in every previs review until they started shooting, and when he got super busy actually shooting and we kept going. But like, but he even did a little Unreal previs himself and handed it to us. And he was like,
nice.
Use my camera, but make everything else look much better.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so it's all about, this is where the animation skills are being used. This is where your filmmaking skills and your editing skills are being used to form like a scene out of a movie that's, you know, exciting or has the right mood or, you know, it's clear, all of those things. To make a little part of the movie. Nice. All right. And then we've got TechViz. TechViz is where you've done the previs, but now you have to make sure that it can be filmed for real. And you kind of, you keep all those things in mind as you're prevising. But, you know, but that's where you kind of break down. There's no way we're going to get this shot for real. You know, it's like some big power of 10 shot where you get started on a person's face and end up at the International Space Station. So you say, okay, well, the first thing where we pull away from the person's face, that's going to be somebody on a set and everything else is going to be CG. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that. But then there's other aspects to it where it's just, they just want to know how fast is the camera moving? How far is it off the ground? Like, do we need a crane? Do we need a car or a
motion control?
Motion control. Yeah. And, yeah. And in regards to motion control, like on, we did two movies recently that were very heavily motion control kind of centric. One was, John Wick, the new John Wick. And then the other one was Argyle that just came out like a week ago. And both of those, we did a previs sequence, but they wanted to have motion control, not only for the camera, or maybe not for the camera in these cases, but for a motion base where their vehicle was like mounted to it. So the actor would sit in a vehicle on a hydraulic system.
Yep.
And we would animate all this stuff and then kind of reverse engineer it to make it so that we could feed them files that have that same animation on the motion base. So if the car gets like hit by another car that you see, like, you know, Keanu Reeves driving and then boom, he like shakes around and stuff. So that is a very, that is like kind of the highest technical level of TechViz, but oftentimes it's just like a QuickTime or a PDF of here's your set, here's where the actors are, here's where the camera A and B is, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and also figuring out, you know, can a Russian arm do this? Is the crane long enough?
Yes, all of those things,
right? So, I remember, actually, we did one on, this is back, way back when, on a movie called Stealth, which no one has seen. And
I saw Stealth. I actually
probably shouldn't see it. It's kind of a silly, ridiculous movie. It was interesting to work on that film. But we did do motion control on those planes. So they actually had a full plane that we simulated, and then we put the actor in there, and I don't know if that was safe, man. That thing moved like crazy, and it's like he could throw up very easily in that thing. It was because it was literally a flight simulator, and but we filmed it, you know, and then we just, the camera matched and everything kind of worked, so it all lined up, which was kind of interesting.
So there's the motion control aspect, and then there's the they're just kind of planning your shoot and stuff.
Yeah.
And then we've got, post-viz. So
post-viz, post-viz. Yeah. We'll tell about that.
Cool. So post-viz is, they went out and shot their movie. And before they want to spend the big bucks on final visual effects, post-viz teams get all the plates and basically do visual effects on it, but it's like fast visual effects.
Yeah. So like mocking it up in a way, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, editorial teams call them temps. So it's basically they're editing the movie, but let's say there's a monster that's like attacking a group of people, but all of the plates are just a bunch of people in front of a green screen. And that's all it is. Right. And you can't like show the studio that and just be like, yeah, there's a monster back there. I mean, I guess you could, but the purpose of post-viz is to put the monster back there, get the overall staging right. Like he should be closer to the camera so that you don't see his head, or he should, you know, like, you know, you're still kind of doing that previs process, but you're locked into what the camera did on set.
Sure.
And so you use a program like Synthize or, I'm blanking on the other ones. We use Synthize.
Okay. Yeah.
you
for track, camera tracking.
For yep. camera tracking. So you track the camera, you get a CG camera that does exactly what the real camera did, and then you line it up to your 3D environment. And then you start adding in elements, and then you do compositing work. We do it in After Effects. But you take out the green screens, or you roto out your characters, but you're not doing it to make it look completely photoreal. You're doing it to get the idea across. And okay. so you don't spend, days and days on like making sure that you're rotoscoping, cutting right. out a character, because let's say they're in front of a green screen, but then they walk off the side of the green screen and there's a bunch of film crew back there, but you still mm-hmm. need that part of the shot. So you're cutting them out, but in post-viz, the edges are kind of soft and sometimes you see a little thing peek through on the edges of, on the edge of the outline of the people. But it's all about the speed. It's about, I have this shot. I need to, as fast as I can, cut all the elements out of the plate that I need to keep, and then start adding in previs elements into the background or the foreground to basically do the shot as if it were a visual effects shot. But instead of doing like multiple iterations until it looks, perfect, you're doing like a couple iterations and then you're hands off. And so it's very much like kind of creating a temporary version of a visual effects shot to hand off to a visual effects studio so that the director is like, I worked out where the monster should be in post-viz. So here's what I kind of want it to look like you were saying with the cards. Mm-hmm. But then it's also, and this is a big part of it, it's for the editorial team to cut with. So that they're cutting with, the monster's coming in and he smashes, but I need a couple right. more frames before he comes in. So you adjust the shot length and stuff. So all that stuff, when it gets sent to, or when it gets shown to the studio for test screenings or director's screenings, that that people have a more solid idea of what they're actually going to be watching when the movie finally right. does come out. And also it for visual effects budgeting and stuff, they know how many shots that they have and how long those shots are and that kind of thing.
Because editorial, yeah, and it's also because you're dealing with the actual plate that will be used,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
So yeah. when previs, it's not. It's just telling it's what the plate's going to be, right? So yeah. so in you're actually dealing with the real plate, and you know that you just technically you're going to swap this plate out with the final plate, and the edit should still work, right?
Exactly. All the time code is still present, yep. And so it, we're just kind of doing previs, kind of the director working with us and the editors working with us to kind of get the overall blocking. But like when it comes to like a monster landing and their arm muscles jiggle, and they scream and there's drool coming out of their mouths, we don't do like any of that stuff. And that's one of the things like we were talking about earlier when you see your work on screen mm-hmm. that like when you've animated like a monster scene and then you see the visual effects guys what they did with it
right.
for on your shot. It's just like, this is so cool.
Yeah. Well, they also had like 20 times more time to work on it.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's an important distinction for sure. Right. Because, you kind of mentioned, like being frustrated because you're kind of stuck matching this kind of crude animation.
Sure.
But the two like visual effects and previs have two completely different purposes and timelines too.
Right.
Like, I've been in several discussions where studios talk about, previs, you throw so much away. Like, is it worth it to throw all that stuff away? Or could we use the previs assets and the visual effects or whatnot? And one of the things with all of the different kinds of viz is that we're so early on that like most of the time our like monster isn't even the final monster that you're going to see, but you can make the decision of where it is and how big it is and roughly what it's doing with the directors are telling you those kinds of things, before the creature's even designed sometimes. And so, or they have like a first pass, And so there's ways in which like the two worlds like could work more closely together, but because of the way that movies are made, sometimes it's just like, well, the director's don't have a final design of that monster yet, but they need to know what the shots are going to look like.
Sure.
And so it's kind of just part of this creative process and really fitting into the process where it fits well. And, I think that there's these two completely different timelines of production that visual effects and Viz are working on. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of makes sense that they're separate in those ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously it's, I think there should be a lot of mutual respect for things because you guys are figuring out a lot of things that would take way too long to do it in Visual Effects, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point. It's like, no, let me just rough this out for you and then you can do all the other work on it on top
right.
of that.
And I think too, that's like whenever it's like kind of a joke amongst us Viz artists that when our families ask like, so what do you do for a living? We're like, well, we make movies and we do visual effects, but you're not actually going to see any of our work up on screen.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so it's like this kind of thing where I feel like when, like with the visual effects, that's what you see on screen. And that's what's so impressive and so amazing and stuff.
Yeah.
And so there is this, I agree about the mutual respect. It's like, we both kind of have our purposes in the production of a movie. Yeah. And,
I've thrown away quite a bit, and I've worked in visual effects. I've worked, I worked on a shot on Tron where I was on that one shot, 119 versions,
yeah.
right? And that's and it was a development shot, which I get. So you just keep doing the next version as the development continues. But it's a little insane to do 119 lighting shots on one thing. But so it does happen that way. But I think it's really cool because I've always thought of previs. Mm-hmm. As such a cool part of the filmmaking process along the lines of, illustrators and concept art, et cetera, because you're the ones that are coming up with the vision of the camera move or the edit, right? Which there are some people that come up with great concept design. Here's the landscape. Here's the creature, all that stuff. But that thing's not moving. That's not part of the movie. The previs is the one that's actually sort of like, okay, how does this turn into an edit? How does this all work? There's the boards that do one thing, but like you said, in an action film, a storyboard's going to be hard to follow the action, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is that like choosing your lens, making sure that mm-hmm. lens in that set, it's not like through the wall, or if it is through that wall, can you wild that wall? Mm-hmm. There's so many kind of troubleshooting aspects that Previs helps out with that there's a reason why it exists there is because it does those things well. Is it like the creative process and that troubleshooting process?
Yeah. Yeah. That's really awesome. So what are your thoughts? I mean, obviously you mentioned, we talked about how you guys moved to certain, to Unreal and doing a lot more things in real time. What are your thoughts about where Previs and cinematography is going now? Obviously we've seen a lot of interesting advances where people are starting to think about, doing things in, for example, using AI to do things like concept art, et cetera, which is very controversial. I know it is. I'm not trying to deny it. I'm not going to pretend it isn't. But, yesterday we saw some news from OpenAI, and they released a new tool called Sora, which is doing video. Everyone's talking about it. But I'm curious about it, like in terms of a camera move or a look or things like that. I mean, how do you feel that those tools could be playing a role in terms of visualizing things? I know it's not ready now, but I think we can sort of see that could be something that's possible, right?
Right. Yeah. So, I totally get the controversy when it comes to AI.
Sure.
I think that there's... Like, I guess I've always kind of envisioned AI as kind of like maybe like a rendering engine, the way that mm-hmm. we kind of started off using Unreal, where like, cause there's a lot of internal talk, amongst us at Halon about like which tools would actually benefit us, which tools could speed us up or could make our stuff look better or whatever. And I do think that there is a certain aspect of the text to video and that kind of stuff, especially for the artistic side of the artistic exploration, kind of like with boards, it's cheap, or, you know, not cheap, but it's like doing a single frame of a storyboard is going to be more efficient than doing a single previs shot, but the previs shot can tell you more information than the drawing can. So it's like, so they're different. And I think that, that the AI stuff is kind of in a similar vein, where on an artistic side, you can get like a look, you can design the environment, you can, and then you can send a camera through the environment and that kind of stuff. So it has merit, I think, as a creative tool, because ultimately what visualization is trying to get the ideas that are in your head out onto, into video form that you can show people. And that some of the AI tools are starting to encroach on that. But some of the stuff that they currently lack are, any three-dimensional accuracy. Yeah.
So, and not even close in some cases.
Right. I mean, in some of the examples, and this is, you know, like you said, maybe in a year it'll be a lot different, right?
Sure.
But in some of the examples, you know, that you can see online of text to video stuff, is the shot overall looks pretty photoreal, but for some reason these people are like 12 feet tall and these people are 3 feet tall. Yep. And they're standing right next to each other, and as they get closer to each other, they start changing sizes. And so kind of like, you know, with any kind of, I think, you know, we talked a lot about the iterations and visual effects and stuff, and there's the iterations in Viz, or I imagine in iterations in storyboards, that you can do like a chicken scratch, like a smiley face, and you know, like it's a close up of somebody's face.
Right.
But that doesn't tell you what the lighting is. That doesn't actually tell you which character it is. Like, so it lacks all this information. And the reason why you take it further is to get the vision more defined.
Sure.
And I think that that's the thing currently, that where AI is that it's this tool that can come up with imagery and can come up with, inspiration, and it can come up with basically a simulation of what you have in your head, but it doesn't give you any information in regards to like, the information you can extract from that is basically just the image.
Yeah. And if you say use a 35 millimeter lens, there's no way you'd know if it's actually a 35.
If it's actually, and especially like use a 35 millimeter lens on an Arri Alexa LF. Yeah.
Right.
It's like none of that stuff is going to be, pulled from it. We talked internally about whether we think that like you could create a shot like that and then 3D track the shot to create the camera move and figure that stuff out.
They're already talking about that today. I saw people creating nerfs out of AI video.
Yeah.
Like what the heck?
So it's, so I think that there could be really intuitive ways that, you know, people could use it. But it currently just kind of like lacks that real world, the real world tech viz, basically uses, of viz, where to tech viz something that's been made using AI would essentially mean prevising it, like, you know, matching the AI shots as if they were boards, prevising it, and so that you could get the tech viz, information out of it.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't see it as a 100%. I don't see it as like the robots coming over to take us over.
Yeah.
I see it as like another kind of creative tool, but one that specifically lacks some of the things that we have spent, you know, years building, to make.
So idea building in a lot of ways, right? Or
Yeah. I think that can be fair. Yeah.
Interesting. So jump around a little bit, but I do want to talk about virtual production. Obviously, I know you guys have been getting into virtual production. You mentioned it a little bit before, and we can talk about that. First of all, what do you guys do? Define what you mean by virtual production, because that can mean many different things. So define that first, and then also, you know, tell us a little bit about what Halon does and what you've done in the world of virtual production.
Great. Yeah. So, feel like virtual production, the first time that I really remember hearing that term as something that's different from just, you know, animation in a movie or previs or whatever, was really, I think, about Avatar. You know, it was about like,
that's exactly when it was.
Yeah. And so it was making a, you know, a 3D digital film but with like real world techniques and cameras and things. And so that one in particular, I think that the kind of most common takeaways from that original definition of virtual production is the virtual camera, and is motion capture and performance mm-hmm. capture is a big one, especially for Avatar. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at it that way, like almost like half the previz shows that we do just previz style are virtual productions.
Do you guys motion capture cameras a lot?
I think, let's see, there are shows in which we've used it very heavily. Mm-hmm. But I think that for the most part, we animate cameras.
Okay.
And that is mainly, I think, because if you have a team that you could spread out the camera work, you can get cameras, you know, shots done faster than like creating animation that's not necessarily based on the idea to be shot through that specific camera, sending it to a stage and then shooting it and then realizing, oh, we got to adjust this character and adjust that character. So there's, gotcha. I think there's like kind of an efficiency thing that goes into why we animate our cameras more often. However, okay. there are shows like we worked on the Robert Zemeckis Pinocchio movie on okay. Disney. And that one, that entire visualization process was like 100% us preparing large, long master scenes, getting them into Unreal so that Robert Zemeckis himself could pick up the virtual camera and shoot the previz.
Well,
and so,
I mean, that's what he loves to do, right? He was yeah, like Polar right. Express guy.
Yes, exactly. And so it kind of depends on how involved the you know the directors or other creatives want it, how hands-on they want to get in the previz process, because ultimately, because all of that stuff is kind of going to get thrown away anyway, you know, their time might be better spent you know, doing those final cameras or just, you know, giving notes for iteration and stuff. Sure. So there have been some productions where we do mocaps or VCAM sessions. Mm-hmm. Where we just shoot lots of cameras and those become the previz cameras.
Yep.
But I think that Pinocchio was one of Halon's kind of biggest virtual productions, because we ended up previzing not the entire film, but like almost the entire
wow.
film.
Wow.
And
all with VCAM.
All with VCAM. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was us. We were partnered with MPC, who did mm-hmm. The character animation. And so it was kind of this half and half, like we did half the scenes, they did half the scenes. But on that show, all of our scenes and their scenes came through the Halon stage and got like QC'd and prepped and put in front of Zemeckis for him to shoot his virtual cameras on. And then from there went to editorial, and you know, any notes that came out of that would get dispersed. So there's that kind. And then there's motion capture, which we have a motion capture stage at our office. And that was something in one of, at some point when I was younger, I was like, well, it would be fun to work with motion capture, but what I'd really like to be is the guy with all the dots on him. And so when I started at Halon on my first show, my supervisor, was like, oh, we need some motion capture. And I was like, oh, I'll do it. And since then, like, if there's a chance, or basically if there's a need for motion capture, I put the suit on and
nice
and do that, because it's just so fun to just run around and act like you're shooting monsters and rolling on the ground and all this stuff. And so so we do that. Not for every show. It's kind of like for when it makes sense, because motion capture can save time, but it really only saves time when you have a pretty good idea of what you need already.
Right.
Whereas if you start off with motion capture, you might realize that half of it doesn't really work for the shots that you end up getting, so you throw it out. So, yeah. So that's kind of half of the virtual production work that we do. The other half, the more modern use of the term virtual production, is all about LED walls and that kind of volume.
In-camera visual effects.
In-camera, yeah, exactly. Yep. So The Mandalorian is like the kind of the original kind of the one that made the splash about that. And so that aspect of it is all about making the virtual environment in a real time render, like Unreal, so that you can put like this kind of capture camera in it that can then project it on the LED walls. And when you have motion capture markers, which are the exact same things that you put on your body when you've, you know, avatar style running around, those, there's a few of them on a camera, and there's, just like with motion capture, there's other cameras around it to capture what the film camera is doing. And in real time, you can move your camera, and the digital camera inside Unreal moves exactly the same way.
Right.
So you, on the wall, can see parallax, realistic parallax, which is why that even works. And that's why it's like kind of required to be real time.
It's mostly for I mean, basically, it's fancy rear projection, but it has parallax.
That's the difference. And not only parallax, but that that some things definitely need to be pre-rendered to do it. But there's instances where at least I think, especially as real-time engines get more and more powerful, that the need to like bake your lighting, which is a kind of a technical term to make your scene go faster, but your lighting look great.
Right.
Like that kind of stuff. Probably I think as time goes on will be less and less necessary.
Sure.
It's the parallax and the ability to make changes either on the day or really close to the day of filming. Without having to go back and like re-render what you've got to show on your rear projection. Yeah.
Right. And so you guys work on creating some of those environments. Is that something that sort of naturally comes out of the previous process? It's like, okay, let's evolve this and make that part of virtual production as well.
Yeah. Like the cool thing is because we work in Unreal and because most of the LED wall content when it, you know, in the Mandalorian kind of sense, that's all Unreal content. That basically any environment that we make in Previz can get put on the wall. Like, you know, and there's more stuff that has to happen to it, has to get, you know, you have to make it look better because in Previz, like we've been talking about, it's very rough. And sometimes it can look really good, but when you're putting it behind, like, you know, an actor, you want it to look photorealistic. So there's that aspect of it, that kind of content can go straight through the Previz pipeline into the LED wall in camera VFX kind of world. We actually got bought by a company NEP called Group. NEP. Yeah, that's right. Yep. And partnered up with Lux Machina, who
I think I was going to bring that up. I think it's really interesting that NEP sort of put two and two together. It's like, let's get the Previz and just keep going with virtual production, and we got the same groups that are making one or doing the other. I think it's really kind of a smart thing to sort of continue that process in that way.
Yeah, and so we're actually working on a commercial right now where that's the process, where it's like
awesome
Previzing, and that content is kind of getting figured out in Previz and then getting like up res and kind of made to look nice for a IC VFX shoot.
That's awesome. I think it's really cool. I mean, I love the fact that, you know, you guys are so much more involved in some ways in the actual process of filmmaking. You're helping plan it. You're helping it do that. I mean, coming from a visual effects person, sometimes I feel like I'm handed something that's already been done and I got to figure out how to fix it, you know, or how to make it better or whatever. And so as opposed to like, here's an opportunity to come from nothing and have it, you know, as an idea, or I would like a shot that does this. And it's like, and then you kind of have to figure out what that means and do it from something. So I think it's really kind of cool what you guys are doing and really sort of being part of the process and in a sense, engaging with a director at the very early stages of that creative process, right?
Yeah, and that is, I mean, like I said before, it's like not always the director. Sometimes it's like
through sometimes it's the editor or supervisor. Editor. Yeah,
yeah. So there's sometimes we're kind of like paired up with somebody who really wants to use this process. But when we get notes, they're notes from the director, you know. So some productions, the director's like basically, you know, maybe pre-COVID would like, you know, lean in behind our shoulders and be like, "Oh, move the camera over a little bit more."
Sure.
Leave, you know? And then of course, like it's like their vision, but you're just trying to help take their vision that's been given through boards, through words, through the script pages and making it something that like works in a real world camera and the computer.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, listen, Casey, it's been awesome having you on. It's really cool to hear all the stuff that you guys are doing at Halon. I'm really curious. I'm sure we'll hear a lot more of that stuff. Before we go, tell me what some of your favorite projects that you worked on in the last, like, you've done a lot, I'm sure, in 12 years.
Yes. Let's see. One of the ones that that was such a such a joy to see on screen was the Batman.
Oh, nice!
I was the previs supervisor, the U.S. previs supervisor. Another man, Keith Fallon, was in the U.K. and did some of the other sequences. Mm-hmm. But that one was quite rewarding. We recently, it's not out yet, but it's coming soon. I worked on Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, nice.
And so I did.
Oh, that's a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. I did pre-viz and post-viz supervision on that one. And that one was, just an absolute joy to work on. And I can't wait to see it. Mm-hmm. And then recently, we did quite a bit of work on, the Aquaman sequel, Lost Kingdom. And that one was a lot of fun. The director on that one, that movie just was such a huge kind of collaborative, this kind of crazy collaborative environment. It was a great environment to work in. And then Hunger Games, the most recent Hunger Games.
Oh, nice. Movie. Yeah.
We did a couple on those, couple sequences in that movie, and that team and the creative and everything was so fun to work with.
That's awesome. Well, cool. Thanks for sharing that. It's great having you on. I appreciate you,
being able
to share your stories and educate us on all the different aspects of pre-viz and post-viz and tech-viz and pitch-viz.
all the vizzes,
which is all part of visualization, which is an awesome process as well. So thanks, Casey. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Chris. It was a pleasure.